Measures Radio is on the air.
You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Path has led you to the Tinker's Shop here on Just Measures Radio. I welcome you. Please come in, sit down, have a seat. We all must remember that we are the library for those who come after us, and we must share our knowledge with those who need it.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be. Since I found serenity, you can't take the sky from me.
Well, good evening, all my friends. Hello, Concretin. Well, I thought Concretin was here a minute ago. Yes, there he is. And I see Cope has been kind of lurking in the background here. Hello, Minnie. Hi, Wrights. And hello, Anon. Well, we getting going here this evening, and let's see here. Well, I suppose I should probably start off like I usually do. Yes, welcome here to the Tinker's Shop, all my friends. Whether you be here listening to me live, in the archives in the future, or possibly even on a podcast at some point. See, today is the 15th of November of 2014. And earlier this week, we had an anniversary here in this country. You know, most people didn't realize it, or they, you know, didn't know about it. Back here on the 10th of November, there was, of 1975, there was a ship called the Edmund Fitzgerald that went down, off of Whitefish Bay, up in, the northern parts, and, well, I have to admit, I tried finding the tune here. I would have sworn I had it here. I know I've got it someplace, but I can't find it. So, just this little bit of a commemoration for, all the people who went down with the Edmund Fitzgerald. Yeah, I've got another one that was done by Stan Rogers, and he was just talking about the white squalls on Lake Superior and Lake Michigan, to where white squalls are a storm that just blows up out of nowhere and hits like a bomb and then it's gone. And so this is a little piece of music just to kind of commemorate those how to put it, all the guys who sailed the inland sea and took to memory those who have been lost. So, enjoy.
Now it's just my luck to have the watchman, nothing left to do. Watch the deadly waters glide as we roll north to the Sioux. Wonder when they'll turn again and pitch us to the rail. And whirl off one more youngster in the gale. the kid was so damn eager. It was all so big and new. You never had to tell him twice or find him work to do. And evenings on the mess deck, he was always first to sing. He'd show us pictures of the girl he'd read in spring. But I told that kid 100 times, don't take the licks for granted. They go from calm to 100 knots, so fast they seem enchanted. But tonight some red-eyed wire-toed girl lies staring at the wall, and her lover's gone into a white squall. Now it's a thing that us old-timers know. In the sultry summer calm, there comes a blow from nowhere, and it goes off like a bomb. And a 15,000-tonner can be thrown upon her beam, while the gale takes all before it with a scream. The kid was on the hatches, lying staring at the sky. Where I stood, I swear I could see tears fall from his eyes. So I hadn't the heart to tell him that he should be on a line, even on a night so warm and kind. But I told that kid 100 times, don't take the lakes for granted. They go from calm to 100 knots, so fast they seem enchanted. But tonight some red-eyed wire-toed girl lies staring at the wall, and her lover's gone into a white squall. When it struck, he sat up with a start. I roared to him, get down. But for all that he could hear, I could as well not make a sound. So I clung there to the stanchions, and I felt my face go pale as he crawled hand over hand along the rail. Now I could feel her heeling over with the fury of the blow. I watched the rail go under, then so terrible and slow. Then like some great dog, she shook herself and roared upright again. Far over side, I heard him calling. But I told that kid 100 times, don't take the licks for granted. They go from calm to 100 knots, so fast they seem enchanted. But tonight some red-eyed wire-toed girl lies staring at the wall, and her lover's gone into a white squall. So it's just my luck to have the watch with nothing left to do. Watch the deadly waters glide as we roll north to the Sioux. Wonder when they'll turn again and pitch us to the rail and whirl off one more youngster in the gale. And I tell these kids 100 times, don't take the lakes for granted. They go from calm to 100 knots, so fast they seem enchanted. But tonight some red-eyed wire-toed girl lies staring at the wall, and her lover's gone into a white squall.
Good evening. Yes, I'm welcome. I'm back. So, we have the, like I said, we had the anniversary here of, the loss of Edmund Fitzgerald. And Con Creighton also reminded me that Monday was also another very important birthday. And that was the birthday of the United States Marine Corps back in see, what was that? 1775? Was it? Let's see here. Trying to remember. Yes. 1775 Tun's Tavern. So, okay, well, now that I've totally goofed myself up there and didn't have stuff straight the first time around. Okay, well, let's see here. First thing I guess I better do. There we go. There's our usual webpage that we're going to be going out to tonight. Out at www.arlen-tower.com/tinkers_shop. And that's, as always, with a capital T. And by the way, people, tonight I'll probably be hitting the microphone every so often and silencing myself momentarily because I've been fighting a cold, so you'll have to kind of bear with me on that. Yeah. So, okay. Well, okay, so if we go on out here to the webpage, you'll see that there's a new entry up there for the 15th of November of 2014 called Lion Soap. And that's, so if you go ahead and click on that link, that will bring you out to a new page here, which I've kind of tentatively labeled Soap 101, Making Lye. And this is kind of goes along with what everybody's been talking about this week, whether it be Mother Earth or Cope or even Kong, and also Doc. You know, we've got to kind of, you know, think ahead and prepare ahead somewhat. And, you know, if we have a SHTF event, you know, one thing that's definitely, that people would definitely need, they probably don't think about it normally, but something that's needed is soap. You know, if you get exposed to something, it's a good idea to have some soap to wash yourself off with, you know, of one sort or another. And also just for general cleaning, you know, for clean clothes, if nothing else. And also, B.O. in this case doesn't refer to Barack Obama. It refers to body odor. You know, you need to have that too. Because after a while, if you don't have soap to get cleaned up with, you start wanting to stand up wind of yourself. And that don't work too easy. So, one second. Like I said, you know, I have this cold, so it's just going to be kind of, occasionally I'll be shutting the mic off for a few seconds. So, okay, well, first we'll go ahead here and do a kind of a brief timeline of soap making. And this actually I got from out at soapmakingresources.com. Around 2200 BC, it's believed that by many that soap's history actually began. Actually, it's probably around 2800 BC. In Babylonia, and they've actually found some Mesopotamian clay tablets with an actual soap recipe on it, and you know, the soap making recipe described mixing potash and oils to form a cleaning agent. So I don't know if that was an early form of soft soap or if it was a paste or what. But, you know, they did have something at that point. 1500 BC, Egyptian manuscripts describe matter created by combining animal fats and vegetable oils to create a soap-like substance. The ancient documents go on to explain another type of soap that is used in the production of wool. Okay, 200 AD, first allusion to soap making in literature occurred by a famous Greek physician named Galen. And he's probably kind of the one who was the, maybe he wasn't Hippocrates, but he was one of the real early Greek physicians who studied things, and he did a little bit with herbalism as well. 600 AD, well, you had soap making guilds there formed, and modern formulas for soap that we use today was created, and that was in Europe. About 900 AD, soap started to be produced commercially and sold for 0.3 dinar per bar. Well, dinars obviously were an Arabic coinage, but we won't hold that against soap. And then 17th to 1800 AD, during the Industrial Revolution, soap began its production in factories and stopped being produced in the home kitchen. That's as a general rule. But there's an awful lot of people who still kept making it. And currently, soap is still being produced in the same way as it was centuries ago after the Industrial Revolution. You know, big factories, a whole bit. And you know, almost all people in this modern age purchase and use commercially manufactured soaps. The history of soap making is at somewhat of a standstill. Of course, if we roll down here just a touch, here you see a picture of where some soap is being created, you know, a hot soap, where it was a hot process, where you have your fats and your lye mixed in with the together, and basically cooking it and making a cooked soap. Okay, so, you know, what is soap? Well, by a chemical definition, soap is a salt of a fatty acid, a triglyceride, of which there are three molecules of fatty acids attached to a single molecule of glycerol, which is, you know, basically glycerin. The bars we use for cleaning are simply animal or vegetable oils treated with a strong alkaline solution called lye. And in this case, it's sodium hydroxide. Okay, lye catalyzes the saponification process. And that's what the saponification process is. It's the hydrolysis of fats into free fatty acids, which are then combined with the alkali to form a crude soap. And so what it is the saponification is where you take the triglycerides, which is basically the rendered fats, and it breaks them down into basically free chains and glycerin. And, you know, it combines with the, and it gets treated with the alkali, lye, of one sort or another. And it produces soap. And then the liberated glycerin is a byproduct from this. And so that's either left in the soap or it's collected, depending on which soap making process is used. So that's what it is. That's what soap is. And, okay. Gee, time is flying tonight. My. Okay, so what is lye? You know, that's, you know, like I said, I mentioned up above, you know, that commercially they use sodium hydroxide. Well, there is a big difference between homemade or the original lye and commercial lye. Homemade lye is potassium hydroxide, and it can be made rather simply at home from wood ashes. Potassium hydroxide makes a softer soap. So that the fats or oils used will need to be either beef tallow, beef fat, or lard, which is from pig fat. And these are both harder fats. You can use other fats, but your finished product will be a lot softer, a soap. Commercialize the other type, and that's sodium hydroxide, which is, now, it's much more complex to manufacture, and it's often used in drain cleaners, among other things. And, you know, obviously it's a factory process to make it. And in order for commercial lye to work properly in soap, it must be pure sodium hydroxide, which is, you know, kind of becoming kind of difficult to find in grocery stores. Of course, a lot of the Amish grocery stores still have it, and occasionally you can find it in a hardware store. So, and if you're not sure if your lye is pure, you can just go ahead and, you know, open your package up and look at the crystals. It should be just all white, you know, for the commercial stuff. If you see flecks of gray or black, you should avoid that and using making soap. Because that flecks of gray or black, it's going to be either aluminum or some other metallic compound in there, which makes it fizz up a little bit more when you have it in a drain. Which, for drain cleaning, that works good, but for soap, it doesn't work so good. Just needs to be straight, pure sodium hydroxide if you're using the commercial line. And sodium hydroxide, it's more powerful than potassium hydroxide, so it has a factor in there. It's known as SAP, which is, you know, saponification value, and it's a different value. And by weight, the sodium hydroxide is 56 as opposed to potassium hydroxide. In other words, if something needs 56 units of potassium hydroxide, you only need 40 of the sodium hydroxide. I know it sounds a little odd, but I'll kind of explain that a little bit later and a little bit further down. Okay. Yeah, let's see if we scroll down here to the next block. I actually have, kind of a listing of some useful resources. And, these are three good ones. You know, if you ever do decide that you want to, you know, make some soap, it'd be a good idea for sure to read that first one, Soap Making Safety Procedures, because you got to be careful with it. Soap making, you're working with some pretty alkaline stuff. And, if you get it on your skin, I'll just say you're fukud. Yeah, you got problems big time. Because if you get it on your skin, yeah, you can rinse it off with vinegar, which is acidic, and then, you know, lots of clear water, making sure it's all cleaned off. You can probably get away without having too badly burns. But if you get it in your eyes, you need to get milk dumped in your eyes real quick and wash your eyes out with milk, believe it or not. It's not good stuff. So if you're going to be working with lye, you need to be, at a minimum, you know, with rubber or nitrile or, you know, some sort of gloves that, you know, if it splashes on the gloves, it's not going to get on you. Also, you need to have some sort of eye protection. You know, that's the minimum. And next thing down this resources, it's a lye calculator. It's actually a website where, again, I'm going to use an example from it later. I actually have two recipes here, one for a straight lye soap and a recipe for a Castile soap. Both of those were worked up out using that lye calculator. And then the third one here is where it's labeled make lye in a plastic bucket. And I'm going to kind of go through it a little bit down here further, but rather than have, you know, big long explanation here, you know, that would be, you know, 10 minutes worth and a whole big block, I figured I'd just put one picture in and kind of give a general description here. Okay, so I'll tell you what here. We are getting around to 25 past the hour already, and I should probably look here in the chat room, wherever that is. I think I lost the thing. And yes, I did, so I'll have to reopen a new chat room here real quick. There we go, and there we go. Okay, yes, got the new copy of the chat room here open. I do apologize for being a little bit sloppy on this. And just thought I'd just take a quick check to see if anybody had any quick questions here. Iowa Cat, you could actually make soap You know, it's just a case of being careful and, you know, doing it step by step and, you know, putting stuff in an order. And, you know, I think I could probably even do it myself. I'm kind of klutzy and can't see too well, and I'm probably going to probably do it pretty soon. Okay, so with that said, and now it's 26 past the hour, so why don't I do this? I'm going to drop, I'm just going to go ahead and drop one short song in here, and then I'll go ahead and put a station ID in, and then we'll come back, and I'm going to go ahead and run through how to make your own lie solutions at home, you know, from wood ash. So, here we go.
When we was kids in school, let out our cousin from the city. He used to come and spend the summer with us on the farm. We'll never forget the year that he got into the poison ivy. We had no idea it caused him so much harm. Me and my brother told him he would grow if he eat a lot of green apples. That's how he gone down with the back door trot. We was down on the creek fishing when he grabbed his belly and dived in the weeds. That's where he found that poison ivy patch. Poison ivy, now they know what it looks like. All summer he laid in the shade and he couldn't even ride his bike. That day on the creek when he cleaned himself, he thought it was weeds and grass. That's how he got poison ivy on his face. Well, he blamed the whole thing on us. Me and my brother thought it was funny. He told on us, we both got a switching. But it's worth getting in trouble for, cause we couldn't quit laughing, watching, scratching in them places he was itching. Poison ivy, now they know what it looks like. All summer he laid in the shade, couldn't even ride his bike. That day on the creek when he cleaned himself, he thought it was weeds and grass. Now he got poison ivy on his face. Now the summer slowly passed by and our cousin was getting better. And our mama used a gallon of calamine. But he took a major setback, and me and my brother tried to cure him with a coil oil rag and a bottle of turpentine. Poison ivy, now we know what it looks like. All summer he laid in the shade, couldn't even ride his bike. That day on the creek when he cleaned himself, he thought it was weeds and grass. Now he got poison ivy on his face. Now he got poison ivy on his arms and legs, neck and back and ears and feet and face.
For the last 20 years, Army medics were taught to the same standard as civilian EMT paramedics. After the blow-up in the sandbox of Iraq and Afghanistan, the U.S. Army Medical Corps relooked on how medics were trained. There, training has prepared you on standards that apply to civilian emergency medical services that do not apply to the combat environment. Does this show actually mean combat? Not totally. Combat environments can be found in horrible natural disasters and, yes, man-made disasters. Between this show and live training, the Medic Shack will show you how to treat and survive most any natural or man-made disaster. So join us Sundays, 5 p.m. Mountain Time on the Just Measured Radio Network.
I couldn't resist it. Okay, well, we're back, and and I figured an ID there for Chuck and the Medic Shack was appropriate since we were talking about soaps and other things that could do us harm if we don't pay attention to what we're doing. Another thing too about homemade soaps, one that I've been trying to find. the, how'd you call it, the wild herb around. There's one called jewelweed, which is very effective for poison ivy. And that could actually be added to any soaps that one makes. So, just as kind of an aside there. Okay, so, well, let's see here. I suppose I should probably get going, because if I keep rattling off to the side, I won't get stuff covered that I'd wanted to do this evening. So, got three different variations here of for how to produce your own lye. The first one here, this is actually a copy of an illustration that was in an article from the January-February 1972 issue of the Mother Earth News. And probably after tonight, after I'm looking at this here online, I realized I should probably have put a link in here so we could have had it blown up full screen if we wanted to, but unfortunately, I wasn't intelligent enough to, so have to kind of bear with me on this. What this shows, and this is, you know, obviously this is a cutaway so you can see the layers inside, but it's a wooden barrel that, you know, obviously it should hold, you know, moisture and liquids in, because a good wooden barrel, you know, will have, you know, good tight seams in it. And what's done with it is there'll be, you know, like, you know, a couple real small holes drilled in the bottom of the barrel. And then in the barrel you basically layer it up, just like you'd layer it up for making a water filter. And actually you could use a plastic barrel for this too. Just, you know, take a little bit more cleaning. But what happens is in the bottom of the barrel, you, after you get some tiny holes drilled in there to for stuff to drain through, you put a good thick bed of, you know, like a moderately coarse gravel, and then a good layer of straw. You know, again, probably, you know, 4 to 6 inches worth of straw. You know, tamp that down in there. And then as your winter goes on, go ahead and as you, you know, clean your ashes out from your wood stove or your wood burner, go ahead, when they're cold, just go ahead and dump them in the, your, lye barrel. And, you know, when it starts getting up closer to the top, at that point, you'll want to make a small hollow in the ashes. And, that's where you're going to start pouring a little bit of water through. Down at the bottom of the barrel now, you know, where we had the holes drilled in that I mentioned, you'll want to have your barrel up on some sort of stand with basically a trough running out from that, which can be just made up out of a couple pieces of wood, you know, nail them together in a good tight V, you know, strap it so it can't flop open, hang that off the stand where the water will drip into it, get yourself a bucket down there at the end. And, you know, as your moisture drips through there, you know, you can, you know, recycle that your liquid a few times. And, you know, it'll take a fairly decent amount of water in here, because that ash is going to be, get wet and soak up the water. And that water that you pour through there will pick up the potassium. Is that right? Potassium or sodium? The potassium hydroxide. Now, what you want to use for this, by the way, for the water, you want to either use soft water, you know, which would be like rainwater, or you could melt snow and use that. You know, you just don't want a lot of the, oh, shall we say, extra additives that you're going to find in city water, you know, chlorine, fluorine, and, you know, whatnot. And a lot of times groundwater will have a lot of lime in, or it might have other things like iron oxides and whatnot, which really don't help a whole heck of a lot for making a good pure product, because once you have your lye solution that you produce from basically percolating water through ashes, and what it does is the straw and the gravel that helps clean it, so it's not as much, so it isn't as dirty as it might possibly be. And what you can end up with is, you know, a bucket of some really nasty yellow-looking water. And actually, if you scroll on to the next picture here, that's the type of thing you're going to see when you get through. You know, it's going to look pretty nasty, but it's going to be pretty strong. One place where they were talking about producing your own lye, they also mentioned about one way of testing it is to take like a feather, which would be, you know, like a chicken feather or something. And if you think it's getting pretty strong, what you can do is just kind of dip that feather into the bucket of lye water. And if that feather starts dissolving, you know you've got good, strong lye. Okay, so at this point, we're just going to go ahead and just kind of keep that in our brains here about having, you know, the bucket of lye water, you know, from our first lye producing machine. Second one down here, you can also make lye in a pair of plastic buckets. And again, at the that's up further up, I had you know, a link here about making lye in a plastic bucket, and that's where this photo comes from, and they have a full explanation of the process out there, but I'll just go ahead and give you kind of a shortened version of it here. Basically what they do is use two plastic buckets, and these days, it used to be possible to go like 6-gallon plastic buckets, and then they went to 5-gallon, well now they got 4-gallon ones. And so if you can still get a hold of an old 5-gallon one, it would work pretty nicely. And here's why. If you take a 4-gallon one and a 5-gallon one, and you stack them up, you're going to end up with a space down at the bottom of that, where you can get maybe, say, a gallon, gallon and a half, or if you're lucky, 2 gallons of space there for lye water to form in. And you can do it the same way as we did with that first illustration here. The bottom of your small bucket, you drill a whole bunch of little, you know, 1/8-inch holes down there at the bottom of the bucket. You know, just basically shoot it all full of holes. Again, put your layer of gravel in there, you know, a good, you know, 1 or 2 inches of gravel in there. You know, a couple inches of straw, and then start putting your ash in there from your wood burner. And, you know, when it gets almost full, you know, make sure there's a hollow there in the middle, and then go ahead and just, you know, heat yourself up some water to, you know, not boiling, but, you know, good and hot. And, you know, take that wood ash and just kind of poke a few little holes in it with a broomstick or a piece of wood or something. And just kind of, you know, pour that, you know, really hot water over the top of your ash. And again, it's going to, you know, percolate down through there. And with the holes at the bottom, it's going to start, it's going to start percolating down, reverse percolation, I guess, and drain into the bottom bucket. And again, you want to take and pour your liquid through there, you know, 2 or 3 times, and you know, you'll end up, again, like I said, you'll end up with a bucket of nasty, nasty looking brown water. And again, you can test her same way with the feather. If it melts the feather, you know you got good strong lye. Okay, third variation, and again, it's all kind of a, you know, variation on a theme. And this is one that a really crude drawing. You know, you have to kind of bear with me. Like I've said before, my eyes are not as good as they used to be, so I can't do as good of drawings as I used to be able to do. But this is, you know, a really rough design for a wood bin or a wood bin lie maker. And so how best to go about this? Obviously, you see, you know, like a long rectangle here. This would be like an X-ray vision view through the end board, which would be, you know, just a large rectangular board. Could be, you know, plywood. If you're lucky enough to have a full-size plank, you're in like flint. But you know, some way, you know, to if you have a pair of them, you can actually, if you have them long enough, you can actually stand this up right on the ground. And, you know, then you have a permanent fixture. This long V that's in there, again, that would be done from like, oh, say, for example, using shiplap boards or car siding. I would say, well, you shiplap instead because car siding has extra grooves. But those are boards that are cut. They're a tongue and groove board. And if you make, you know, a long V out of, you know, tongue and groove boards and, you know, have it high enough to where you can actually tack it in through the end boards, basically have a really long V there coming down to where you have, like, maybe, say, less than a quarter of an inch gap at the bottom. And what you want to do at that point, then, is to, for your gap that you have, you can take, like, tin or galvanized metal, or even just, you know, iron, and make I guess you could say like a belly on it. Or you could even use a piece of rain gutter, I suppose. You know, something that'll catch liquid that comes down through. And again, you want to bring that out, you know, like through a small hole or through like a downspout section where you can put a bucket underneath, you know, to catch your drippings. And once you have the thing made, again, it's done the same way. Have a bunch of gravel down at the bottom, a bunch of straw. You fill it up with your ash, and well, then you can go ahead and you know, pour your water in at the top, and you know, percolates down through. And since it's kind of V-shaped, as it goes down through, it'll obviously be getting stronger. And again, you can still test it the same way that that I had mentioned for the other ones, you know, for using a feather. Also, there's another old-fashioned trick for checking for how strong your lie is, and this is one that's used a lot of times for when people are making modern, using regular crystallized lye, where they make up their lye solution. And what you want to do with that is you take like a raw egg and just kind of set it in there. If it sinks, you know, the lye is not strong enough yet. It's, you know, pretty darn weak. If it floats just barely at the surface, that means it's, you know, it's darn near perfect. And if it's floats high up out of the water, then you know that the lie is extremely strong. So, okay. Tell you what here. Since I'm about ready to start coughing again, I'm going to go ahead here and put a short piece of music in here. And since, got one here called Ash Grove. Again, it's kind of appropriate since ash is a wood and that you can make charcoal out of. And since we're talking about working with ashes tonight, I think Ash Grove works. So please enjoy while I clear my throat. Thought I could be cutesy there and, you know, get some other stuff done in the meantime. Of course, that does not always work, but that's okay. So, let's do this here. Okay. Now that my throat's feeling a little bit clearer now, and, yes, I've been taking my elderberry. This morning I woke up and says, yep, that was not just a dry throat I was having from firing up the wood burner and getting lots of smoke in my face. It's definitely is a cold. So, and I think the stuff's helping. So, okay. Well, okay. So, yeah, I guess I should probably get back to this here because we got about 12 minutes left here of the hour. So, okay. So, once you have yourself a strong lye water solution, you can actually dry the lye to a crystalline form. That makes it a little bit easier for, making your own soaps. Obviously, it's going to be kind of, you know, nasty looking in there, and especially once you dry it down, it's going to be really a brown mess. But it will work. So, like I have here, when you have it in crystal form, lye is easier to store, and it also works well for, many different soap recipe measurements. Because a lot of times with more of the modern recipes here, especially where you have a saponification table, you figure it out by weight, and that way you can end up with a soap that is not going to burn your skin off, when you try using it. Because the old lye soaps, a lot of people say, it dries your skin out, burns it and whatnot. Well, that was where the lye soap would be made, and it was stronger than they expected. And so, obviously, you would have had to have used more fats in it to neutralize the lye. So, way you can do it for drying the lye. One thing you can do is, I kind of have one step in here, but it's kind of a two-step process. One thing you can do is you can actually dry the lye out by, if you have the ability to do it, you can actually cook it down somewhat. You know, obviously you don't want to do that inside. You'd want to use like a gas burner, or you could conceivably use a cast iron pot outside, to where where you can keep an eye on it, and if you cook it down somewhat, it'll take less time for it to dry. But you cook it down to about where you want to have it. You don't want to cook it real fast because you can burn it. But if you heat it up to where it's steaming off real good and basically condensing, you're driving the water off. Once you get it down to the bottom there where it's fairly thick, fairly syrupy, then you can spread it out or put it in a pan in the sunlight, and you can let the water content evaporate out. And as for like with the live water, you got to use extreme caution with the crystals. Wear gloves. Wear a mask. In eye protection. And you don't want to use a metal container to store it in. Glass, plastic, ceramic, clay pot even would work if it's if it came really down, worst comes to worst. One thing that you want to make sure you don't use at all, ever, when you're working with lye, you don't want to use aluminum. You don't want to use any sort of the reactive metal types. You want to use cast iron, stainless steel, things of that sort. Okay, so now that we've gotten that point, and one other thing, once your lye dries out, obviously you're gonna want to scrape it around and crunch it up and break it up. To make sure it's all dry. Once you have it all dry and you have it stored in a container, at that point, then you can worry about starting to make soap. And so, okay. I think I kind of came along here fairly well. Okay, so next section here, I've got two sample simple soaps. One is the good old-fashioned lard, lye soap. That would use 16 ounces of lard, 2.6 ounces of lye, and 4 to 6 ounces of distilled water or rainwater, something other than, or snow, melted. That proportions will give you not a super, super hard soap, but it's not also not going to be, runny. And I know we're at the right side here. And by the way, that gives you about a pound of soap when you get through, a block that can be cut. Over here on the right side, they have one for a Castile soap. That uses 8 ounces of olive oil, 4 ounces of coconut oil, 4 ounces of castor oil. This one uses just a little bit more, 2.19 ounces. In other words, a little over a tenth of an ounce more of lye. And also, 4 to 6 ounces of water. Okay, and that's, these numbers actually came from that, saponification calculator that I mentioned way up here near the top, the lye calculator. Those numbers came out of there. Plugged the numbers in, and these are the results that came out. Now, and like I have here, you got the warning in here. Always add your solid form of lye, sodium hydroxide or potassium hydroxide, to the liquid. So you have your amount of water that you're going to be using, and then you go ahead and sprinkle your lye crystals into the water. And then you want to go ahead and stir it up with like a wooden spoon. And yes, you don't want to recycle the wooden spoon that you're using for cooking. You know, if you're using it for soap making, only use it for soap making after that. 1 second here. Yep. Start making a joke there and start laughing and I start coughing. So, yep. So, anyhow, that's the order to put it in. You have your liquid, whether it be, you know, water, or if you're using milk, or if you're using a tea, that's the way you do it. You add your dry lye to that and stir it up. Now it's going to get warm, you know, because there's going to be a reaction with the water, and it's going to get hot. So you have to, you know, be careful with this. And you know, basically what you're doing is you have to stir it up there. Okay, so now, you know, the basic soap making instructions, and this works for both these types. You get your safety glasses and your neoprene gloves on. You combine your solid lye and your liquid, and you stir well. And it's going to get hot. And so what you need to do at that point is just allow it to cool. You want to let it cool down to between 100 and 125 degrees Fahrenheit. And your best bet for doing this is, you know, do it outside with the wind to your back, because you don't want to breathe these fumes. While that's cooling, go ahead and get your oils together, whether it be a rendered lard where it's clean, or if you're using other oils, you know, whatever the oils you're going to be using, the fats. You get your oils and you combine them if you have more than one kind. You heat it gently, and once the fats and oils are melted, allow the temperature again to drop down to between 100 and 125 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, at this point is where you got to be really careful, because this is where you can burn yourself. You'll want to, once that oil is cooled down somewhat in temperature, you take your wooden spoon and you really carefully, you know, pour that lye solution into the hot oil or the warm oil. And you got to be careful not to splash while you're doing this. And you just take and you start stirring it at this point. You know, like I said, wooden spoon, hard plastic spoon, you know, something like that. Don't use a metal one. And then you got to start stirring it. And it has a thing that's called tracing that happens. And, you know, if the tracing takes longer than 15 minutes, which, you know, quite often does, you stir it, you know, for the first 15 minutes, and then you leave it set for a few minutes, you know, about 15 minutes, and stir for another 5 minutes and keep on going. What tracing is it's when the soap looks like a slightly thick custard. You know, not an instant pudding type of thing, but like a cooked custard. And, you know, if you take it and lift your spoon up and drip a drop on there, and it sets there for 1 month before it sinks in, or if your stir marks stay, you know, up there, you know, like when you stir it up, you know, you get rings coming out. If they stay there for a few seconds, you've got your trace. So once your tracing occurs, you'll want to put your raw soap into a prepared mold. And after a few days, you know, you can take your soap out of the mold. And again, if it's really soft yet, you can always put it like on a cooling rack, or even on newspapers, on a cutting board or something, for a few more days until it gets, you know, firm on the outside. Once it's good and firm, then you can go ahead and cut the soap into the bars. And so, you know, again, you know, once you cut the soap into the bars, you set the bars out again to cure and dry a little bit more. and this will allow the bar to firm up and finish saponification, because there's going to be some fats in the soap yet, and there's also going to be some alkaline from the lye in the soap. And so that's going to take a while, you know, for that whole thing just all to meld together and, become a finished product. And again, you want to put the bars on something that will allow them to breathe. Now, like with this, the boxes here, this is actually a commercial soap mold. That's one for a 1 pound size batch. And a 1 pound batch like this, you can cut 5 1-inch roughly thickness loaves or slices off. Okay, so, and we are at 10 o'clock already here. Here at the bottom here, we got the saponification table, and basically the way this works is it shows the different kinds of your base fats that you can use to make soap with. There are several different base fats. Then you have two columns here that I've got here, which are the saponification, rows. First one is for using potassium hydroxide, which is, homemade lye from wood. The second column is for sodium hydroxide, and that's commercial lye. And if you'll note here, there's a difference between the number here. That's because, like I mentioned way back at the beginning, homemade lye, the sodium or the potassium hydroxide is not as powerful as sodium hydroxide is, and so it's the 40 over 56.1, and that's kind of the ratio here. So the this is how they work out the numbers. So normally they're figured in milligrams to 1,000 grams, and what I've done here is actually worked it backwards, so it'll just give us a multiplier. So say for example you have 1 pound of lard and so if you have 1 pound of lard and you want to figure out how much homemade lye you want to use, you use 19 hundredths. In other words, just under a fifth of a pound of homemade lye. So in other words, that's, that's what it works out to is. And the other way around with the commercial lye, you'd only use 13 hundredths of a pound. And these other columns, they have, kind of describes the characteristics of the oils. Lard, it'll make a hard soap, and, it has good cleaning ability, it doesn't get a very fluffy lather. You know, it has a lather, but not a whole lot. It's, you know, pretty small, and that lather is stable, so it doesn't, you know, bubble away real quick. And for skincare, again, if you make sure that you have the lye concentration down there once you get finished, it won't eat your skin up. Let's see, we'll go down here a little bit further. Let's skip down to where it has olive oil. Again, olive oil does not take as much lye, either form, commercial or homemade. You know, it's not a large difference, but it's, you know, it's fairly close. But again, what you end up with for the soap that's made from straight olive oil, the soap would be real soft. It'd have good cleaning ability. It doesn't have a fluffy lather at all. And what lather gets goes away real quick, but it's great for your skin. So that's why you can use a mixture of different oils to make soaps. So, well, I'll tell you what here. I'm going to go ahead and 1/1900th of a pound. No. That's you kind of. I knew I should have probably reworded this a little bit better. 1900s. Okay, what you do for your? I knew I didn't word that correctly here. What you have to do is take your weight of oils that you're going to be using, and you multiply that by this factor, and that will give you how much lye to use. So for a pound of lard, you'd use 1/1900. So in other words, you know, like one, it's almost a fifth of a pound. So, and let's see, a fifth of a pound. Oh, that's what? 2-point-something ounces. You know, if you're using homemade lye. So, but okay. Well, tell you what. Like I said, I'm kind of. You don't think you'd even watch anybody doing this? It's fun. I've watched it being done. And it works. It sounds weird. And if I knew how to do it and if I had a decent camera, I probably would actually make a video of it showing how to do it. So it's not a 1/900th of a pound. It's like 19/100ths of a pound. So, okay. Well, tell you what, my voice is starting to get ready to give out. So I think what I'm going to do here, I think I'm going to go ahead and throw another piece of music in here, and then I'm going to go ahead and start the archives, because, like I said, the throat's about ready to give here. So enjoy this, and then we'll go ahead and probably call it a night here. So, here we go. A little bit more of Stan Rogers. Mary Ellen Carter.
She went down last October in a pouring, driving rain. The skipper, he'd been drinking, and the mate, he felt no pain. Too close to Three Mile Rock, and she was dealt her mortal blow. And the Mary Ellen Carter settled low. There was just us five aboard her when Shinley was awash. We'd work like hell to save her, all heedless of the cost. And the groan she gave as she went down, it caused us to proclaim that the Mary Ellen Carter would rise again. Well, the owners wrote her off. Not a nickel would this spend. She'd get 20 years of service, boys, the never sorry end. But insurance paid the loss to us, so let her rest below. Then they laughed at us and said we had to go. But we talked of her all winter, some days around the clock. She's worth a quarter million afloat and at the dock. And with every jar that hit the bar, we swore we would remain and make the Mary Ellen Carter rise again. Rise again, rise again. Let her name not be lost to the knowledge of men. All those who loved her best and were with her till the end will make the Mary Ellen Carter rise again. All spring now we've been with her on a barge lent by a friend. Three dives a day in a hard hat suit, and twice I've had the bends. Thank God it's only 60 feet and the currents here are slow, or I'd never had the strength to go below. But we patched her vents, stopped her vents, dog hatch and porthole down. Put cables to her fore and aft and girded her around. Tomorrow noon we hit the air and then take up the strain and make the Mary Ellen Carter rise again. Rise again, rise again. Let her name not be lost to the knowledge of men. All those who loved her best and were with her till the end will make the Mary Ellen Carter rise again. There, you see, to crumble into scale. She'd saved our lives so many times, living through the gale. And the laughing drunken rats who left her to a sorry grave, they won't be laughing in another day. And you, to whom adversity has dealt the final blow, with smiling bastards flying to you everywhere you go, turn to and put out all your strength of arm and heart and brain, and like the Mary Ellen Carter, rise again. Rise again, rise again. Though your heart it be broke, here on life about to end. No matter what you've lost, be it a home, a love, a friend, like the Mary Ellen Carter, rise again. Rise again, rise. Though your heart it be broken or life about to end, no matter what you've lost, be it a home, a love, a friend, like the Mary Ellen Carter, rise again.
Let's see, I should probably explain a little bit. Stan Rogers, he does have a voice that was kind of similar to Gordon Lightfoot. Yeah, I grant you that. His son is actually doing a lot of music now too, and Stan Rogers' boy sounds an awful lot like Stan did. Now Stan, he's another one that we lost back in the end of the 1970s. There was that airplane that crashed, I think it was in Cincinnati, that, where caught fire in mid air. Somebody, I don't know, somebody is smoking in the bathroom or what, but they made an emergency landing and started getting people off the plane. And Stan was a good man, but he died. I just, you know, basically, you know, put it out right. He was busy trying to get people off the plane. He was getting people to the exits, getting them down the slide, and then he went back and, you know, to get more. And he died. Smoke inhalation. So, but what can you say? Tell you what I'm going to do here. I know it's, you know, it's almost quarter after 10 here already, so I've kind of, you know, gone a little bit over the hour. So what I'm going to do here tonight is I'm going to go ahead here and just drop several Stan Rogers tunes in here just to kind of give you a little bit more of a taste for the gentleman's music. And, you know, what the heck. Let's see, that was Mary Ellen Carter, and, because he's a guy who, is definitely worth listening to. So I'm gonna go ahead here and just play a bunch of Stan Rogers here for, you know, to finish out the half hour here. And then, what the heck. I might even get a wild here at my keister and just, keep going until 11 o'clock. Of course, I'll probably just mainly do music with very little commentary here. So, okay, so my deck is empty, so it's time to put something up there. Okay, here's the first one. It's called Take It From Day to Day. Again, like I said, Stan Rogers.
Well, it's not the hours of watch on watch, and it's not the work that I mind so much, or the long cold miles from my lover's touch. Oh, for sure she's far away. No stranger I to the touch of steel, or the honest fear any man can feel. But I long for dust under my heels and a pocket full of pay. So I'll take it from day to day. Pack ice round us cracks and groans. The old Saint Rock, she creaks and moans. The icy fog is in my bones, and the ache won't go away. Outside, I bet it's warm and fair. I could have her fingers in my hair. But it's long, cold miles to her out there. So I guess I'll have to stay and just take it from day to day. We're as far north now as I want to come. But Larson's got us under his thumb. And I signed up for the whole damn run. I can't get off halfway. But when I get back unto the shore, I'm going south where it stays warm. And there'll be someone on my arm to help me spend my pain. So I'll take it from day to day. To come, but Larson's got us under his thumb, and I signed up for the whole damn run. I can't get off halfway. But when I get back unto the shore, I'm going south where it stays warm, and there'll be someone on my arm to help me spend my pain. So I'll take it from day to day. Thank you. your eye to the touch of steel and the honest fear any man can feel. But I long for dust under my heels and a pocket full of pain. So I'll take it from day to day.
Yeah, I find myself a lot of times when I'm playing Steve Rogers' music. How to put it? I just kind of find myself singing along with him. It's kind of like more in my voice range, a little bit lower and slower music. Okay, so here's another one of his. It's a little bit different. You know, it's called 45 Years. Kind of a love song from a guy to his wife of 45 years. So, here we go.
This is for my wife. Where the earth shows its bones of wind, broken stone, and the sea and the sky are warm. I'm caught out of time. My blood sings with wine, and I'm running naked in the sun. There's God in the trees, I'm weak in the knees, and the sky is a painful blue. I'd like to look around, but honey, all I'll see is you. Now the summer city lights will soften the night till you think that the air is clear. And I'm sitting with friends where 45 cents will buy another glass of beer. He's got something to say, but I'm so far away that I don't know who I'm talking to. 'Cause you just walked in the door, and honey, all I see is you. And I just want to hold you closer than I've ever held anyone before. You say you've been twice a wife and you're through with life. Oh, but honey, what the hell's it for? After 23 years, you think I could find a way to let you know somehow that I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now. Alone in the lights on stage every night, I've been reaching out to find a friend who knows all the words, sings so she's heard, and knows how all the stories end. And maybe after the show, she'll ask me to go home with her for a drink or two. Now her smile lights her eyes, but honey, all I see is you. And I just want to hold you closer than I've ever held anyone before. You say you've been twice a wife and you're through with life. Oh, but honey, what the hell's it for? After 23 years, you think I could find a way to let you know somehow. But I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now. Help me out, won't you? I just want to hold you closer than I've ever held anyone before. You say you've been twice a wife and you're through with life. Oh, but honey, what the hell's it for? After 23 years, you think I could find a way to let you know somehow that I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now. Yes, I want to see your smiling face 45 years from now.
A lot of his music was really extremely good. So, and yeah, like you said, Iowa Cat, you know, his melody changes, yes, between the different pieces of music. His melody changes, and also the subject matter. Here's one from, this kind of goes along with, you know, the oil fields in, was it Alberta, Canada? Or is it Manitoba? Yeah, they've had, you know, oil fields up there for a long time. And, yeah. This is a story about a guy who, didn't want to stay on the dole. In other words, unemployment. Yeah. And so he took a job out there. So, again, it's a little bit different, but it, again, has a lot of feeling behind it.
I often take these night shift walks when the foreman's not around. I turn my back on the cooling stacks and make for open ground. Far out beyond the tank farm fence where the gas flare makes no sound. I forget the stink and I always think back to that eastern town. I remember back 6 years ago, this western life I chose. And every day the news would say some factory's going to close. Well, I could have stayed to take the dole, but I'm not one of those. I did nothing free, and that makes me an idiot, I suppose. So I bid farewell to the eastern town I never more will see. But work I must, so I eat this dust in free refinery. Oh, I miss the green and the woods and streams, and I don't like cowboy clothes. But I like being free, and that makes me an idiot, I suppose. Come all you fine young fellers who've been beaten to the ground. This western life's no paradise, but it's better than lying down. All the streets aren't clean and there's nothing green, and the hills are dirty brown. But the government dole will rot your soul back there in your hometown. So bid farewell to the eastern town you never respect and a steady check in this refinery. You will miss the green and the woods and streams, and the dust will fill your nose. But you'll be free and just like me, an idiot, I suppose.
Another little one. It's a little short one that I'll put in here. And that should take us up to the half hour point here. So that I can do my duty for JMR here and get one of our commercials in here. And then we'll go ahead and play a few more tunes here and kind of, to finish off the evening. So, here we go.
Now nearly 10 days, till his wife he'd be gone for the fishing. But in the waters of Sevier and Miquelon Isle, the fish is coming bottles of gold. If the Amarillo break and the money stays blind, we'd be back before the moon is rising. With a very fine catch, all safe in the hold, 30 cases of Trinidad Light for Acadian Saturday night. Now, Emily Cabot works at General Store. The pop says it's good for the customers. She's got eyes like fire and hair. Back to shoulders, she's shiny black as Cumberland Pole. You can see her Sunday morning on the Cephalid Road. Her mama goes behind like a dragon. But her mama don't know what she does behind the hall, away from the music and the light on Acadian Saturday night. And it's all about the feeling that you roll. Your heart chill about like a hammer. There's a fat lady beating up the piano like a drum. Everybody's higher than a kite on Acadian Saturday night. Says it was better in his day. The mother stayed away from the parties, and they didn't light a pipe when the spirit got high. You could always throw them out in the snow. And the rum was better, and it came in bigger bottles, and the revenue cutters were slow. Still the old Emery has wings on the water, and it's nothing like Trinidad Light for a Canadian Saturday night. And it's all up the theater that you roll. Your heart's here pound like a hammer. There's a fat lady beating the piano like a drum. Everybody's higher than a kite. And it's all up the theater that you roll. Your heart's here pound like a hammer. There's a fat lady beating the piano like a drum. And everybody's higher than a kite on a Canadian Saturday night.
How much is that alarm helping you now? Professional defensive firearms training could have played a significant role in the way this scenario turned out. Southwest Shooting Authority of Arizona has classes for all of your firearms needs, from multi-state concealed weapons classes to advanced tactical rifle, shotgun, and handgun training. Our on-site pro shop is also your one-stop shop for all your gun, ammo, and accessory needs. See us at southwestshootingauthority.com or call 866-886-8753 for more information. Southwest Shooting Authority, where gun control is considered a product of good training.
Okay, there we go. Thought I'd lost my sound there for a second. Okay, yeah, that last one of Stan Rogers was called Acadian Saturday Night. Now, the Acadian peoples, they originated up in Canada, up in the Maritime Provinces, you know, Prince Edward Island and in that area. And a lot of them got pushed out from there here into the United States here, and they ended up down in Louisiana, and that's where they came to be called the Cajuns. So, you know, so that it does have a similar flavor a little bit to the tune, to some Cajun music. So, like I said, just, you know, thought I'd throw that in. He also did a lot of songs dealing with farming and, you know, the farm people. And this particular one here is called The Field Behind the Plow. And this one, I'm definitely not going to be turning the microphone on singing along with it, because, you know, this one just definitely chokes me up every time I hear it. So, here we go. Field Behind the Plow, again, Stan Rogers.
Straight dark roads, feel the trickle in your clothes, blow the dust cake from your nose,
hear the tractor's steady roar. Oh, you can't stop now. There's a quarter section more or less to go. And it figures that the rain keeps its own sweet time. You can watch it come for miles, but you guess you've got a while. So ease the throttle out of air. Every rod's a gain. There's victory in every quarter mile. Poor old Koozie down the road, the heartache came and poppers brought him down. He gave it up and went to town. And Emmett Pierce the other day took a heart attack and died at 42. You could see it coming on, 'cause he worked as hard as you. In an hour, maybe more, you'll be wet clear through. The air is cooler now. Pull your hat brim further down and watch the field behind the plow. Turn to straight dark rows. Put another season's promise in the ground. And if the harvest's any good, the money just might cover all the loans you've mortgaged all you own. Buy the kids a winter coat, take the wife back east for Christmas if you can. All summer she hangs on when you're so tied to the land. Good times come and go, but at least there's rain, so this won't be barren ground when September rolls around. So watch the field behind the plow, turn to straight dark rows, put another season's promise in the ground.
Try that now.
Watch the field behind the plow, turn to straight dark rows, put another season's promise in the ground.
Tennessee choking me up. That's, yeah. To me, it has a lot of meaning. And here's another one. Again, you know, working man's song. I think I played this one, I can't even remember what it was. It was sometime this past spring. This is one about a guy who's a conscientious objector who, realizes sometimes you gotta stand up and fight. So, again, like I said, kind of a different story song, but it's moving nonetheless. Again, like I said, Harris and the Mayor.
Harris, my old friend, good to see your face again. More welcome though yon trap and that old mare.
for the wife is in a swoon, and I am alone. Harris, fetch thy man, take us home. The wife and I came out for a quiet glass of stout and a word or two with neighbors in the room. But young Clary, he came in as drunk and wild as sin and swore the wife would leave the place with him. But the wife, as quick as thought, said, no, I'll bloody not, and struck the brute a blow about the head. He raised his ugly paw, and he lashed her on the jaw, and she fell unto the floor like she were dead. Now, Harris, well, you know, I've never struck an angry blow, nor would I keep a friend who raised his hand. I was a conscie in the war, crying, what the hell's this for? But I had to see his blood to be a man. His coat, spun him round and took his throat, and beat his head upon the parlor door. He dragged out an awful knife, and he roared, I'll have your life. Then he struck me, and I fell unto the floor. Blood I was from neck to thigh, bloody murder in his eye, as he shouted out, I'll finish you for sure. But as the knife came down, I lashed out from the ground, and the knife was in his breast when he rolled o'er. Now with the wife as cold as clay, I carried her away. No hand was raised to help us through the door, and I've brought her half a mile, but I've had to rest a while, and none of them I'll call a friend the more. For when the knife came down, I was helpless on the ground. No neighbor stayed his hand, I was alone. My God, I was a man, but now I cannot stand. Please, Harris, fetch thy mare and take us home. Oh, Harris, fetch thy mare and take us out of here. In my 59 years, I'd never known that to call myself a man
for my loved one I must stand. Now, Paris, fetch thy bear and take us home.
Stan Rogers, you know, definitely a more of a serious piece, you know, a little bit of introspective of, you know, one has to look inside themselves and see where they stand and what they stand for. So, I think after that one, I think I need to put something against this a bit lighter. So. Here we go. This one you might have heard. You know, quite a few people have done this one in the past. You know, different artists. It's called the Witch of the West Maryland. So, and like I said, quite a few people have done this. You might have heard this before.
The wounded knight that bore the rowan shield, loud and cruel were the raven's cries that feasted on the field, saying back water cold and clear will never clean your wound. There's none but the witch of the West Maryland can make thee hail and soon. So turn, turn your stallion's head till his red mane flies in the wind, and the rider of the moon goes by, and the bright star falls behind. And clear was the paling moon when the shadow passed him by, below the hill were the brightest stars, when he heard the owl that cried, singing, why do you ride this way, and wherefore came you here? I seek the witch of the West Maryland, who dwells by the winding mere. It's weary by the Owl's Water, and the misty brake burn way, till through the cleft of the Kirkston pass the winding water lay. The grey hawk, and thee, my steed, may graze thy fill, from us dismount and walk. But come when you hear my horn, and answer swift the call, for I fear the sun will rise this morn, you will serve me best of all. And it's down to the water's brim, he's borne the rowan shield, and the golden rod he has cast in to see what the lake might yield. And wet grows she from the lake, and fast and clean went she, one half the form of a maiden fair, with a jet-black mare's body. And loud, long, and shrill he blew, till his mate was by his side. Aye, overhead the grey hawk flew, and simply he did ride, saying,
the gray hawk and bring me the maiden fair.
Thy silvery sword, lay down thy rowan shield, for I see by the briny blood that flows, you've been wounded in the field. And she stood in her gown of the velvet blue, bound round with a silver chain, and she's kissed his bailiffs once and twice, and three times round again. And she's bound his wound with the golden rod, oh, fast in her arms he lay. And he has risen hale, and soon with the sun high in the day. She said, ride with your brindled hounds and heel, and your good grey hawk in hand. There's none can harm but I whose name with the witch of the West Fair Land.
I'm going to put in one more Stan Rogers one for the evening, and then I might throw a little something here just to see if we can wake Concrete up. So here we go.
Comes awake where she lay so still there at privateer's wharf. Now she quickly gathers way. She will range far south from the harbor mouth and rejoice with every wave. Sun. Feel her bow rise free of Mother Sea in a sunburst cloud of spray that stings the cheek while the rigging will speak of sea miles gone away. She is always best under full press, hard over as she'll lay. Who will know the blue nose in the sun? Know the blue nose in the sun. That proud fast queen of the Grand Banks fleet, portrayed on every dime. Do hard work with her time, hard work in every line. The rich men's toys of the Gloucester boys, with their token bit of cod, they snap their spars and strain to passerby. But she left them all behind. Now her namesake daughter remains to show what she has been, what every schoolboy remembers and will not come again. To think she's the last of the Grand Bank schooners that fed so many men. Who will know the blue nose in the sun? Will know the blue nose in the sun. So does she not take wing like a living thing, child of the moving tide? See her pass with grace on the water's face, with clean and quiet pride. Our own
tall ship of great renown still lifts unto the sky. Who will know the Minnows in the sun? Who will know the Bluenose in the sun? Who will know the Bluenose in the sun?
Who will know the Bluenose in the sun?
Who will know the Bluenose in the sun?
Yeah, that's another one I sometimes find myself singing along with. But I never have guts enough to turn the microphone on. So, okay. Well, let's see here. Where do we go from here? Well, let's see. What do we got here? It's almost 5 minutes to the hour. So, I could probably... Well, tell you what. I'm going to go ahead here, and we had a noisy grandson back there making noise.
Sorry, everybody.
So, and he still doesn't realize that Grandpa's talking. Grandpa's trying to be out on the air.
I didn't realize it.
So, here we go. One last tune here.
All right, I'm doing this song here because Jesse Scott requested it, and I would like to say the problem with irony is not everybody gets it. I got some cowboy boots, jeans, and a Hawaiian shirt. I got some mirror sunglasses. I got a mobile phone. I guess I look like some Porter Ransom's dope dealer's out on bail, just trying to get home. But I ain't in jail, and I got me a guitar. I got a little band that's hotter than a rocket. Sometimes we're sloppy, we're always loud. Tonight we just honoring, locked in the pockets. So screw you, we're from Texas. Screw you, we're from Texas. Screw you. We're from Texas, we're from Texas, ah, screw you. Now don't get me wrong, I love the USA and the other states, yeah, they're okay. Texas is the place that, well, I want to be, and I doubt if I ever get a gig in Delaware anyway. Well, I want to go, and we got Antone's and Stubbs and Green Hall and old John T's Country Store. We got Willie and Jackie and Jack and Robert Earl, and got Hayes, Carl, and Slade, Cleese, and a whole lot more. So screw you, we're from Texas. Screw you, we're from Texas. Screw you, we're from Texas. We're from Texas. Ah, screw you. Now, Texas got a bad reputation because of what happened in Dallas and Washington and Waco. And our corporations, well, yeah, they are corrupt, and our politicians, swindlers and loco. But when it comes to music, my friend, I can believe that these words are as true as St. John the Revelator's.